Welcome to Alphabet Flight, an encyclopedic Marvel journey where we go through the official handbook of the Marvel Universe and talk about the characters we know and love and have forgotten as well. My name's Perry, and with me this week is somebody that every time I hear their voice, and it's at a volume louder than this, I have blood that comes out of my orifices. It's Art.
Hi.
Did that make any sense?
It did.
Don't humor me. You know it didn't.
Did you know that you are a lot like a half human, half troll partner of mine?
See, this is why you normally read and do the intros and not me. Did you know that it's not Troll Boy and it can't be Troll Boy? You understand why it can't be Troll Boy, right? That's what that sounded like. Anyway, this episode, we are talking about Bloodscream, a character that I have never heard of before today. So I am curious, Art, if you know anything about Bloodscream or Bloodsport, as they are also known.
I know that they are tied to the character called Patch, which is... obviously just not Logan with an eye patch.
Oh, couldn't be. Everybody has that hairstyle.
Also, he doesn't, you think he would have more blood related powers?
He looks like he would be a Blade, right?
Yeah,
like a Blade, like a Blade villain.
But like he's like a, I don't know. There's a lot going on
there
with this character.
There is a lot.
There's a lot going on with, like, while also nothing is going on.
Well, great. That's exactly what podcasts are built on, which is why you tune into this one every episode.
Also, Bloodscream is, like, it's such a cool name for someone who...
does nothing?
Doesn't deserve it.
Well, great. Their first appearance was in Wolverine Volume 2, Number 4. Release date was October 11th, 1988. Writer was Chris Claremont. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy before, but...
I heard that there's a person on this podcast that has a very low opinion of his writing, but it's okay with his plotting.
Well, have they been blocked on Twitter by that person? Because I'm not sure if we need to start a campaign. Anyway, no. Penciled by John Buscema. One of my favorite
Buscema.
Buscema, excuse me. Whatever. I'm not even going to finish the sentence there. Art, what are you thinking about this cover here of Wolverine Volume 2, Number 4?
It looks like you took a screenshot from an 80s movie where, like, some kid was being bullied and, like, the girl that he likes was being attacked, and the kid who obviously can't stand up to the big guy.
No, Mark, leave Jason alone. He's just a sweet boy.
Yeah, like he's firmly in what doesn't exist, the friend zone. but you know what I'm working with. Like, you can see both of these being up, like, you know, like maybe get rid of the beards, but like,
yeah, like, oh, just, yeah, for sure,
like age them down a little bit. This looks very much like a scene from the beginning of an 80s movie before the kid like goes through like some training montage or gets like some magical power or meets like this badass who like adopts him as like a little brother or something.
What's my magical power? It's that I can overcome the fear of standing up to my own bullies. It's a fine cover. I don't really care one way or another. It does have, okay, maybe I do care. It does have this energy of like the same motion of focal point that comic covers from the 60s and 70s did. And actually, if you really want to get technical here and you want to apply some science to it, It does kind of look like there's a little bit of the golden ratio happening on this cover.
Actually,
starting from...
no, this... Oh my god, no, like, you're right. We need to do something on the Twitter, or the whatever Twitter. I'm gonna dead name it. On the Twitter and Tumblr and stuff like that. Because there is a golden ratio happening. Like, you know, remember that if you don't know, like, there's how your eye is supposed to follow and like
a certain path. Way. Yeah, exactly.
A certain path that like to make it like a really easy to like view painting and
yeah.
Not view. What's the right word? Not view.
Well, the idea behind it is that based on the way that your eye works and the way that your brain processes information, if incorporated the correct way, the visual elements tell a story without having to use anything strictly like literal or the point I'm making is that the visual aspects kind of lead you down the path of understanding here. And it truly does kind of like do that. And I mean, if we start with the hands that are being held up in the air on the right hand side, and I guess that's is that Tiger, or is that Karma?
Tiger. It's Tiger.
Okay, so you're kind of like naturally led through this progression of her hands up in the air being held by Bloodsport, who is looking ominously at Patch Wolverine. But before you even get there, you see the thug Roughhouse, who is punching and having landed a punch on Wolverine. And even still, there is this notion of like, well, what is the connection between Tiger and Patch? Following along through this kind of story here, you're looped back around. And what I mean here is that starting from Damsel in Distress to the mercenaries, you see the hero of the story. You wonder, what is their connection? There's even the exposure of the leg on Tiger, which kind of has this implication of physical connectivity between the two. And then you're kind of led back around through this implied story, which brings you back to the focal point, which I would argue is Patch on this cover. I wasn't expecting to do some art school analysis, but I went to college for this. So
this is a good cover featuring two characters I don't give a single shit about.
Yeah, but it does encourage you to like, well, that's very true. But it does give you a very good understanding of where you are coming in. Even if this were your first issue of this comic book, you would be very inclined to find out, you know, the rest of the story, as it were.
Yeah. It's just, it's actually, it reminds me of how I was talking about like how the Blood Brothers' first appearance felt like a Renaissance painting.
Oh, yeah.
This also feels kind of like a Renaissance painting.
Now I have to pull up the Blood Brothers cover again.
Because, like, it's not as tight, but, like, I feel like it does, like, hit this, like, ratio pretty well. Because it does tell a story with just that. Because, like, you know,
ooh,
no, it does.
Oh, no, it does. It 100% does.
Like, okay, yeah, because you have Drax, and that's kind of leading you towards a Blood Brother in Christ number one, who is holding Iron Man, who's guiding you towards the sharp pipe, who's guiding you towards the other Blood Brother, and, like, it's just, it does. Maybe I need to start looking at comic book covers a little bit more closely for the golden ratio to see if they're good or not, because, like, these are both good covers.
Yeah. Like I said, I went to school for this, so at the very least, I can share some knowledge on the podcast.
Now we've talked more than we're going to talk about Bloodsport / Drake.
Absolutely. Yes. So Bloodsport / Bloodscream. Real name, unrevealed, aliases. Well, Bloodsport or Bloodscream. Identity is a secret. Occupation is a mercenary, former enforcer, soldier, and naval surgeon. Citizenship, England, possibly legally deceased. Place of birth is unrevealed. No known relatives. Group affiliation, partner of Rough House, former servant of... Now, I don't know how to say this name, so I'm going to butcher it, but I'm going to say it's probably Malvois. M-A-U-V-A-I-S. Because it seems French. Anyway. Malvois? Okay, great. I took Spanish. Former employee of Black Tarantula and General Coy. Unrevealed education. And born in the mid-16th century, the man who would become Bloodscream was a naval surgeon in Sir Francis Drake's flotilla? Is that how you say that word? Okay. Mortally wounded in battle, he was transformed into a vampire-like creature by the necromancer Dagoo, doomed to be a macabre existence. I'll start that over. Doomed to a macabre existence, Bloodscream learned his condition could only be reversed with an elixir distilled from root of mandrake, spleen of whale, and the blood of a man who does not age. Bloodscream set out to locate such a man and became a soldier, hoping to encounter fellow immortals on the battlefield. After centuries of combat, Bloodscream fought in the Battle of Normandy in 1944, encountering a Canadian soldier named Logan. Decades later, Bloodscream joined the Asgardian brawler Roughhouse as enforcers for the Crime Lord General Coy on the island nation of Madripoor, where the pair clashed with rival crime lord Tiger Tiger and her ally Logan, now the mutant adventurer Wolverine. Seeing that his foe had not aged since their last encounter, Bloodscream believed Wolverine's blood would serve in his elixir. After numerous encounters with Wolverine, Bloodscream ultimately teamed up with the cyborg Scylla, who tracked Wolverine to the town of Logan in Canada. There, Bloodscream drained Scylla's life force to grant himself energy enough to face Wolverine. However, he was seemingly killed by the demonically forged honor sword of the clan Yoshida that Wolverine wielded. Bloodscream survived by draining nearby life energy and allied himself with the sorcerer Belasco. Hey, I was on that episode. It's like, you know, a few months ago.
We also talked about Bloodscream briefly on that one because...
Yeah, I remember that now. After clashing with Wolverine and his X-Men teammates, Bloodscream was sucked into another dimension. Returning to Earth under unrevealed circumstances, he was reunited with Roughhouse in the employ of the South American crime lord named the Black Tarantula, who set them both against Wolverine and the costume crime fighter Spider-Man. Really glad they explained who Spider-Man is there. Later, Bloodscream was controlled by the cannibalistic sorcerer Malvois. All right, great. Alongside the savage vermin, he again fought Wolverine, but met defeat once more. Later freed from now they changed the spelling. I'm just going to say Malvois again. Later freed from Malvois' control, Bloodscream accompanied Roughhouse to an underworld auction for the alien Venom symbiote. Returning to Madripoor, Bloodscream once again teamed with Roughhouse as enforcers for the ruling Princess Viper. When director of S.H.I.E.L.D. Tony Stark visited Madripoor to clandestinely enact a plan to overthrow Viper, she dispatched Bloodscream and Roughhouse to kill him, but they failed. Later, the pair faced Stark again after he confronted Viper in her palace, but were defeated once more after Stark donned his Iron Man armor. Let's see here. Height, 6'5". Weight, 175. That's 175 pounds. That's nothing. That's a scrawny man. Black eyes and white hair. Bloodscream can absorb the life forces of others by touch, withering them to a mummy-like state as they bleed uncontrollably from the point where they were touched. Those who survive his touch receive a red mark in the shape of his hand, while he can transform those that die into mindless zombies to do his bidding. Bloodscream can use the life force he absorbs to enhance his strength to undetermined superhuman levels, as well as to heal any injury. Bloodscream can also elongate his jaws and teeth, as well as transform his fingers into razor-sharp talons. Although apparently unable to be killed by any mortally created weapon, Bloodscream can be harmed and presumably slain by metal forged by non-human means.
Okay, question.
Okay.
When they say no mortally created weapon, okay, does that, like, if, let's say, I become immortal somehow and I make a knife, does that kill him?
I would say it has to be immortal from birth.
Okay, so if
that's my thinking.
But the thing is, it doesn't stipulate that it, like, if I get bitten by a vampire, I become a vampire. Can I kill him? If I make a completely new weapon that was not made beforehand, and I'm not talking like invent a new weapon. I'm talking like I make a knife, yeah, or like I just sharpen a pencil or something, which I feel is making.
You guys
it
ever
into
seen
a
pencil knife?
Yeah. Would
I came up with this.
That kill him?
Mm.
Because I feel like the stipulation is that it's like no immortal weapon. I feel like you need to be specific with your words. You know,
I don't disagree, but I'm saying in this particular context,
like conventional, like if they say conventional weapon, okay, okay,
yeah, yeah.
But you know what isn't conventional? A knife made up by a mortal.
That's true, and I honestly, that's your trivia for the day. That a knife made by a
vampire.
Yep. That one.
Knife made by a vampire means it's not a conventional weapon.
Anyway, that does it for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you want to support the show, you can head to patreon.com/alphabetflight. If you want to see all the characters that we're talking about, you can head to social media, follow it at Alphabet Flight. You can also see it on alphabetflight.tumblr.com. All the links are in the description. If you want to follow me, I'm at PReader1792, or the other show that I do, it's called This Is My Bourbon Podcast. It's at My Bourbon Pod. And I think that does it for this episode. We'll see you guys real soon, but until then, be safe out there. And if you're not, just remember that your old buddy Khonshu just might protect and guide you through all your nightly travels. Bye.
Good night.
Oh, good night. My eyes.
I'm screaming at you. I'm screaming at you in a blood way.
The blood out of my orifices. There's so much. Blood. I'm hurry. Can somebody take me to the hospital?